Welcome.
Welcome, friend.
You know, I can only hope that we got that timing down again, because I don't know if I told you. I had to do, like, no syncing on last week's
edit. What happened? Was it...
Like, no, it was, like, so perfect.
Oh,
like,
in the good way.
Like, our timing was so, like, impeccably
on
point.
I knew I'd get it. See, the first few times, I was thinking, I'm not really a 3-2 go guy, you know? Like, a 3-2.
Uh-huh.
But I think I've caught up. And I think we're mind melding finally.
It's about time, frankly.
It's been years. It's been years. I've been telling everybody. I said, this guy, me and him, it's like oil and vinegar. We're never gonna mix. But I think we finally did it.
But here we are.
But here we are. Who'd have thunk? Look at us.
Not me.
Not me either. Hello everybody. Welcome to the Geckos Games Cast. This is episode 45. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
That's 5 away from 50.
We're 50,
we're almost middle-aged.
We're almost halfway to 100.
Wow, we're almost a 50-year-old. I don't know, what are your plans for 50?
I guess I got to look at timing-wise. Like, I feel like 50's weirdly going to line up, like, I think that lines up with The Last of Us 2. I think we'll be talking about The Last of Us 2.
No way, does it?
I think
All right, so we can plan for...
No, that's wrong. I think it lines up with the Ghost of Tsushima.
That's just as good. And Paper Mario, then. God, I hope Paper Mario ends up being good, or else that's just going to be a big deflated balloon.
Well, here's the thing. If it's not good, we've also got Ghost of Tsushima
I know.
To talk about.
What if... No, that's pessimistic. I was going to say, what if they're both not good?
There is a game coming next week that I'm really excited to finally truly play. And that is for the third release, we're getting Xenoblade.
Oh, I know. You want to know where I actually was reminded of that, of all places? It was Twitter. And I saw Nintendo of America was just saying, hey, check it out. Get ready for the adventure again. And I was thinking, wow, I've never played Xenoblade, so this is the perfect time.
You know what's crazy? I tried to play the 3DS version. Mm-hmm. I have the 3DS version, which I've actually been told is a valuable version because they didn't make that many of them. So I played a bunch of it, and the gameplay is great. I love the world. It just looks so goddamn ugly.
Yeah, that's also why I didn't buy it.
And that's why I stopped playing it. Like, it looks gross. And, like, for them to be like, okay, the only way to fix this is to change the entire art direction, I'm like, all right, I'm with it now.
I remember when it came out, and I was thinking, oh, because I didn't get it on the Wii at the time. I think it sold out on the Wii. Very quickly at the time.
And it was the same thing. They didn't make a lot of copies of it. And then for some reason they did that again with the 3DS re-release, which is why I pre-ordered the Switch version.
Well, the Switch also now is going to have the benefit of the digital download, so I imagine it's not going to sell out anytime soon. But,
I think there's a digital of the 3DS version, but, like, the physical copy they didn't is rare.
Well, I remember the impetus to getting the new 3DS for me at the time was also to play Xenoblade, because I was thinking, oh, I've never played this game before. I've heard it was very good. I'm very big into JRPGs. Let me go get it. I watched a lot of gameplay videos and just reviews, and it did not look good. And I'm not...
The faces and everything are...
I'm not the biggest judger of, oh, if the graphics aren't good, I'm not going to play it. But with the game that just had these kind of 3D models in it, just didn't look good. It's just not about it. So I just didn't get it.
I'm not huge on that either, but it's so ugly.
I think it's so ironic, too, because a lot of times you'll hear, especially in the current generation, you'll have people who will say, well, you know, or you'll have the argument, I should say, that graphics aren't everything. And I'll sit in the crowds and I'll be like, yeah, they're not. And then they'll say, oh, well, are you going to get, like, this 3DS port of this really good game? I'll get, like, it doesn't look good.
Well, no, I don't think so. It doesn't look great.
His hair looks like a mop.
You know what's funny is a weird memory to date Xenoblade Chronicles for me is I have distinct memories of the first party member you get, Rhine, simply for this weird anecdotal story is I used to work at a gas station. My friend Ray worked there with me, and we would sit around there all day. So, like, at night when we were doing night shifts, we used to play a lot of games there. And he was playing Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive. I'm sorry, Definitive is the new one, the 3DS version. Xenoblade Chronicles 3D. And there's so many canned voice lines during combat in that game. And the English voice acting was all done by British voice actors. So Rhine, one of the characters, has a very distinct voice. And I kept consistently hearing him go, "It's Rhine time!"
Oh,
and to this day, every once in a while, I'll just message my friend Ray. And I'll be like, "Hey, buddy, It's Ryan time.
Terrible. Just awful. Like, it's... One thing I would have hated to discover. Thank you for the heads up.
I hope they fix some of that.
Is that something that needs to be fixed, in your opinion, then?
I just hope it's less frequent.
They just say, it's in the patch notes, too, for this version. They say, we've actually, in the definitive edition, increased the frequency of Ryan's dialogue. So he just keeps saying it.
Well, that's just it for me. It's like, I'm never gonna get annoyed by it now. Like, I'm just gonna be laughing my ass off every time he, like, does an uppercut, and he's like, it's Ryan time!
To, change the voice actors to Japanese? Because I'm not doing that, then. I'm keeping
I believe they have dual audio.
Nope. Keep in English. Forget that. With that kind of ring endorsement, I'm going in. I'm all in for Ryan
time. With... You gotta be in for Ryan time. That's the only way to play the game.
I always love it when Ryan time. An English translation
likely
of
the
game,
name of the episode.
It ends up being better than the original intended. Less like Trials of Mana.
Trials of Mana?
Yeah.
I like to... I hope that the reason they went with the British voice acting originally was... They were just like, should we get British people to do the English VO? And they're like, works for Dragon Quest.
Oh my god. Well, it's so funny because, I don't... With the 3DS, with the porting too, I remember that Dragon Quest... I'd gotten Dragon Quest 8. And obviously it's a little bit different because it's not related to the voice acting, but one of the main reasons why I loved Dragon Quest 8 when I was younger was because Yangus's voice actor was so funny. And he would just go, oi, governor, what are we doing about that? And that, it's just...
Yeah.
It sold me. And I was flying.
He's just
and
this
Yangus
cockney
was my favorite
British
character in that game. And his voice was a very big part of it.
Just so you know, though I've seen none of him in the promotional images for this release of Xenoblade, that is Ryan for me. And I cannot wait to get a nice... He is one of your first party members. Like, once you have a three-man party, I think you have Ryan.
My heart will be broken for you then if, for whatever reason that possessed them, they decided to revisit his voice in the definitive, and he just goes,
oh god,
you're ready for Ryan time? And he just goes, it's time for Ryan. Just like, plain English. Just
He says something like weird. He's like, it's the Ryaning hour.
It's,
and I'm like, what does
Ryaning
that mean?
Hour. I'm going to hurt you.
I hope this sells well, and I hope we get Xenoblade Chronicles X on the Switch as well.
I never played that one either. Didn't they come out to they recently came out with Xenoblade Chronicles 2, correct, for Switch?
Yes. And I didn't play that one. But I'm gonna play this, and if I like it enough, then I will probably pick up Xenoblade 2.
It's just like Bravely Default, honestly, but I guess Bravely Second's a different game, but No, and Xenoblade X or whatever it was, that came out, and I was thinking, oh, well, I'm not... Even though I believe they're separate, you don't need to play Xenoblade Chronicles.
They are.
Yeah, so I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to play that because I never played Xenoblade Chronicles. But then 2 came out, and I was thinking, well, I'm definitely not going to play this because I've never played Xenoblade Chronicles.
That's different. That's like a sequel. Xenoblade Chronicles X, I do very much want to... I never played it either, but my understanding is, while it is another open-world RPG... It's got a lot of mech stuff and is more akin to, like, Xenogears.
I'm only really familiar with it with the soundtrack that I had, which was absolutely over the top and heavy metal, and it was hilarious.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I really want to play Xenogears.
Wow. You're never going to get it. Unless they remake it.
You remember how Xenogears had, like, a fighting game hidden in it?
I distinctly remember the cover of it, too. It looked like a fighting game, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, that was the whole thing. I don't think a lot of people even realize. You get that one, like, mech combat situation, but then you can go back to that in the end game, and you can go back to it with any mech, even all the enemy ones. So there was just a fighting game hidden in there. It was awesome.
I do want them to revisit some of the old games that there's... Chances are, you're probably not gonna get. Like, I can't say that. I don't want to be low on that. I think one day you'll get Xenogears. They'll probably port it. People want it. There's a sizable audience for it.
I mean, I have it on my Vita. I could always play it
if I
want to replay it.
Rich, nobody has that. Nobody has that. Stop. Forbes told
me...
like
put this?
Put it away! I actually saw a Mega 64 video that they had resurfaced back in the day of when they were talking about the PSP Go. And it was just a video where they were trying
to
shove a UMD into it, but you couldn't. I had completely forgotten about
great.
That. And I forgot that the PSP Go even existed. I saw the picture of it and I said, Vita? But it wasn't. It was
the PSP Go is great on its face, and it would be better in an age now where everything's on the digital store. Like, I always remember my glowing review of the PSP Go is, I'm like, the PSP Go would be the best version of the PSP if you could play Crisis Core on it.
You could play some games on it. I actually always thought that the PSP was the best emulator system on the market, because everybody that I had ever seen that had it, or at least was an efficient, like a legitimate fan of that console, they would always say, oh, I've made an emulation machine. You could just emulate. It's so easy to emulate, and you can do it for pretty much anything. And they just had it for anything.
That's where the hardware is kind of going with the Vita, too. Like, people started doing that with Vita in its later years, which is great because the Vita just is the PSP with a better inputs and a better screen.
I found the PSP games in my closet actually the other day, because I was just visiting home, and I found a Ridge Racer, I found Darkstalkers. I thought the PSP was one of the coolest consoles when it came out for a handheld. I really thought that was, and it was technically great. It was, but I was thinking, man, you know, Sony's getting in on this. I can't wait to see what Microsoft is going to pump out in the future, and Nintendo, how would they respond to it? And it's so sad how it just tanked. Because I don't think that they gave it the proper attention that they deserved for the handhelds. And I really think it could have propelled you in a different direction if they just kept with it.
It did do really well. The Vita is where they kind of gave up, which is unfortunate because I'll always, like, defend the Vita because, I mean, it had a great library of, not a lot, but a great library of great first-party games. And besides that, I just treated it like it was a goddamn PS1 in my back pocket.
And also just the capabilities that it had. That was what I wanted. What was it, the remote play? How you could play on your PS4 through your Vita? That's the technology.
Yeah, if you had a good
steady
connection. Yeah, if you had a good steady connection with that, it worked pretty well for a lot of games. Like, I played a lot of Assassin's Creed 4.
It was practically just a true handheld companion to a PS4. I just thought it was really cool, and that's why I was thinking, man, I'm going to get the second iteration. I'm always a very, very strong advocate to get the second generation of a lot of initial handhelds, because I always feel that with Nintendo especially, they'll always release something else. Like with the Game Boy Advance, I got the SP. It just made sense. The Switch is, I think, the only one that I didn't, because it was sold as a console. But I was waiting for the Vita 2, because I just thought it's going to happen. And it never did.
The Vita 2 didn't happen, but there was a second iteration.
There was.
And what I'll say is, I didn't get the second iteration. I've considered in the past few years getting it, just to, because I'm sure mine will go eventually.
It'll pass.
And they're going to be hard to get. The reason I didn't jump to get the second iteration is because the screen is actually worse on it.
Why?
To cut costs. The original Vita has an OLED screen.
Wow. I would imagine that it's more expensive to get on the secondhand market.
Yeah.
Dang.
It also has, the weird thing that's going is I just actually had to order my charger starting to go for it, and the original Vita model uses a proprietary plug, whereas the second one just uses micro USB.
What happened? What's going on?
That's a change that makes sense. The fact that they got rid of the OLED screen was
well. That's
clearly
why I was actually a little. I mean, I understand why. I have to read more on it, because I have to admit I'm pretty ignorant on this. How the newer consoles have the proprietary SSDs like PlayStation 5 does. I was just like,
Well, reading more about that, and we could do a whole show about that. My understanding, and this is from reading what Microsoft said about it. A lot of that has to do with they're using proprietaries. Because unless you are using an SSD that's to a certain spec that can get the drive speeds they're looking for, it's not going to be able to optimally run some of the games they're putting out.
Oh, for sure.
It. Like, it's a performance
thing.
Yeah,
for sure. And they pretty much just make sure that it's, what's the word I'm trying to think of, integrated properly with the games that they're trying to play off of it, which makes sense.
Yeah.
It's just I always hate when there's always proprietary somethings. And I'm thinking of, with the PSP specifically, I thought that it was the biggest irony to call it the Universal Media Discs, and you could not
because it was
use
anything
it for
but universal.
Anything else. It was anything but Universal. They should have just called it the most isolated media disc that you could ever have in the market, because you literally couldn't use it for anything else.
There will never be another device that could use this. We're going to put out a different kind of PSP, and even that
and
won't
also,
take
that's
them.
What I'm saying, and then they released the PSP Go, also cannot use the Universal Media Disc. It's like, okay, I guess that's fine. Why not?
We are truly living in the future. The thing I'll tell you, even going about this this classic Vita right here, baby, my white Vita, is the thing that's crazy to think about that. Like I said, universal plug, which I'm showing you there. Not universal, rather proprietary plug. And like I said, this original had an OLED screen. This fucking thing gets hot.
In the, like, literal sense.
Those OLED screens. Like, yeah. Nice, which is, again, also, crazy thing to think about, they stopped using this back touchpad. The entire back of the Vita is a touchpad.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which you can use. One of the craziest uses of it ever, I'll remember, Uncharted The Lost Legacy, mm-hmm. the PS Vita Uncharted game, which is a good game. At one point, there's a puzzle where you are looking at a map, and you know, like, that old, like, National Treasure, like, Indiana Jones thing, where it's like, if you hold the map up to the light,
it'll reveal something. The truth.
Yeah, you have to literally hold your Vita up to a light source.
Really? They actually did some bow tie stuff in there?
Wow. Yeah, there's some bow tie ass shit. Where I remember playing it in the middle of the night, and I had to stand up in my living room and get it directly under the living room light.
What a pain in the ass.
It was like, and I'm, you know, I'm cozy. I'm having like a nice cup of cocoa.
That's
or
exactly
something,
what I'm
just
thinking
curled up in the winter months. Here's a weird, crazy story that literally just thinking about Uncharted Lost Legacy reminded me. When I bought this, I was with you.
When?
It was a summer, I think the summer after high school. And you and me were meeting up with a bunch of people in a parking lot where we used to hang out. And we stopped at a GameStop first, and I bought a PS Vita. And I was playing Uncharted in your car.
What? You even played a game in the car?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I gotta be honest. I believe it. I'm not discrediting that. I just don't remember it. Wow.
Yeah, no, I just randomly had that memory come into my brain.
Look at that. The humble beginnings. Lost Legacy was right there. Wait,
it's
were
right
we
there
in the GameStop parking
the
lot when you were playing it?
I think we were at over by my house by Walcott is where I opened
it. Oh, hold on. Yeah, it'll come back. But yeah, I believe it. I believe all of it. It's always so funny because I remember when, just with the PlayStation handheld in general, whenever I saw somebody, it never failed where if somebody had it, I did want it. Because it did just look so next gen. And the same thing happened with the Vita. I'm still... The reason why I get so stuck on it is because I'm just so surprised. I mean, once you dig into it, you're not so surprised anymore. But why it just bellied up. It did have a solid launch. And, I mean, it did have some good titles. When Persona 4 went on there, I was thinking, wow, this is going to be the start. You know, you get this crowd.
It just didn't get the support it needed.
I know.
Yeah.
Gravity Rush was on there. And that was a big one.
Yeah,
I think that was one of the first big ones that were there. That was a completely
that
new
was,
IP.
Like, yeah, that was that's one of the ones I think of. Like that Uncharted game that Bluepoint mm-hmm. put out, Gravity Rush, Persona 4 Golden. If Persona had gained the popularity in the U.S. that it has now at the time, the Vita would have set the world on fire.
You think they would have released 5 on it? Probably. No,
maybe. Banana. Maybe.
Damn.
But also, like, you could reverse that and say maybe Persona would have set the world on fire the way it is now if they had just put Persona 4 Golden out on
that's
home
what
consoles.
I was just about to say that too. I was just about to bring up the point. You would think they'd hit it, but and it's something that people still are actively petitioning for. They would just say, "Come on, like we have Royal. It's so wildly successful. Just bring out
just
4.
Put it on PS4. Yeah.
I bet you. You know what? If not this year, I have a feeling that next year they'll do it.
My hope is that they're going to do some sort of collection that should be 3 and 4.
Ooh.
It should be Persona 3 Portable, because that is the definitive version of Persona 3, which will be hilarious. Persona 3 Portable Home Console Edition.
I'm sure they'll name it that, too. And,
yeah, something insane like that. You know what's crazy is the reason I say Persona 3 Portable is the definitive edition is because in the original Persona 3, you can only control the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And your party members are all AI controlled, and in Persona 3 Portable you could turn that off and assume direct
in
control. Yeah,
I wouldn't have liked that.
Fun fact: they didn't rebalance the combat, so the combat is broken in 3. Like if you have direct control of your party members, it's delightfully easy.
Yeah, I would imagine so because the AI is just purposely taking the actions that would make it a little rougher. That's so strange.
It was a weird choice, but granted. 3 also, 3 Portable rather, also gives you the option to play as a female protagonist, which completely changes a lot of the game. Like, it changes a lot of big narrative points. It changes the entire UI, and it changes a lot of the music.
Ooh, the music too? Very cool. See, I want to see those things. I hope one day they just port it over. You know what? Atlas has been very good to gaming in general. They've been very, very good about it. And they never have problems using with offering money. Physical traits for any of their games, and they've never they never had problems with really with porting them over. So I hope that they do it one day. So much JRPG. Too much.
Just to open the show.
No, just to right out the gate. Get your JRPGs right now. Hot off the press.
Beyond that, going into what we actually played this week, I see you played some Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
I named it myself. No, this is... I know I want to talk about the other game that you played that you claimed was your game of the year, but yeah, so... Well,
I said it would be on my game of the year list.
Yes, to correct myself, a contender, which shocked me. But yeah, I actually played Call of Duty, the full game, and this is not something that I have done since I bought it, so this is my fault. Otherwise, whose fault is it? But I've been playing Warzone a lot, so I decided to just go into the multiplayer and the story. The game's really good, and people have probably already said this a year ago. It's a fun game. The one thing about Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2 that I really enjoyed was also the story. Even Black Ops had pretty good stories when it came out. And this one's actually not bad, especially since it's just kind of a revisioning of the first game. I still dig it. And I still, when I'm thinking back to the first game, there's probably nostalgia glasses, but I do like Modern Warfare, the old one. I like that one better.
Okay.
Just because I think the characters are better in that. Compared to this one, it looks like everybody is literally a hulking mass in this game. It reminds me of
Gears
of War.
They're all linebackers, so you're just playing Gears of War. Yeah.
Well, because in Gears of War, but I feel like in Gears of War, it's pretty well established right out the gate. You get some people. They show you Marcus. They show you Dom. Everybody is literally just a hulking slab of meat.
Anya.
Yeah, Anya is literally also just buff to hell.
Well, once she puts on the Gears armor, yeah. She is.
Which was always so funny. You would see the people outside of their Gears armor. Even Marcus looked okay. But then when they put it on, they just looked incredibly big. But in Modern Warfare, everybody just looked normal. Captain Price looked normal. Ghost looked normal. You look normal. In this one, everybody's out to the seams. Even Ghost, they've revised Ghost, and he is jacked. And
that's weird for me for Ghost. Like, he was always supposed to be like this light-footed, like, Spec Ops guy.
Yeah, he's a silent killer. That was the whole thing. In and out, you know? He was a Spec Ops man. Silent killers. And... in this one, and he had, you know how he had the ski mask with the skull on it, you know. This one, it's a full helmet, I guess. It looks more of a helmet than a mask, and it's just spray painted with a ghost.
He looks
skull.
Like one of the guys from Army of
Two.
Yeah,
exactly like that. And that's just his helmet now. And I was thinking, okay. And even strangely enough, because this is how they monetize it, they have a costume shop. So you can buy the old ghost. And I was comparing the models really quick to make sure that I wasn't just thinking about it incorrectly. Now the old ghost is just still slender. He's a very slender guy. You know, works a 9-to-5, goes home to the family, and this ghost, he lives, breathes, and eats death. And I'm not about it.
I love the idea of him going home to his family, like he's balanced like he's the fucking Punisher or something.
And he has like this weird little cape on his back. I don't even know what they've done to him.
Oh, yeah, I've noticed that he's wearing like cape. He's wearing like, it's like he's wearing a poncho, but he, like, cut a seam up the middle and, like, threw it behind his shoulders.
I genuinely looked up different perspective shots on him and just turned him around. I'm like, what is this? Because I was thinking about the practicality of having one. He probably just went, ha-ha, the wind makes it go whoosh.
Like, it would have made more sense to me if it was just, like, a poncho or something.
It's a wacky one. But, yeah, I've been playing it. I'm enjoying it. The game looks great, as it always does. And you know what? With a lot of my frustrations that will always be endless with the respawn system in this game, I just think that... the laws of nature, just like on planet Earth, apply, just with here. Infinity Ward is never going to give me a respawn system that's going to appease me, or anybody, because I think that in multiplayer, whenever people would just pop up right on you, it's pretty whack. It's pretty bad. I don't think I'm ever going to get what I want, because you know what, I was saying the same thing a decade ago, and I don't think anything's changed. So, good game, though. Still play Warzone a lot. They've been making some changes to that. I think it's still, for what it's worth, I think it's still one of the best battle royales. Over time, and I would imagine that the only one who would rival it at this point, and I'm talking purely in graphics and gameplay, would probably be Apex Legends.
I think that's
just
fair.
Because if there's one thing I always am going to like in the FPS-based Call of Duty system is so... Infinity Ward system for Call of Duty is just... It's like a chef's kiss of perfection. I love it. I think it's great. Yeah. They got it going on. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. That was it. Got some cows.
I, this week, played through its entirety in one goddamn 8-hour sitting yesterday. Fired it up in the morning, played it through basically the entire day. I played Tripwire's new game, Maneater.
Insane.
I wasn't expecting much going in, to be honest with you. I had two of those Epic Store coupons for $10 off. So I bought it for $20. So I was like, hell yeah.
Damn.
And I ended up really fucking liking Maneater. So for this game's gotten a pretty heavy amount of advertising, I think. So for anyone who's unfamiliar, they're calling it like the GTA of shark games. It's an open world shark game.
If that has not sold you already on this game, nothing will. Whatever comes out of Rich's mouth after this will not sell you.
It is an insane amount of ridiculous. It's more ridiculous than I expected in the right ways, I want to say. So you start the game as you're a fully grown bull shark in the very beginning. And they present you with this framing device where there's this Cajun like shark hunting fisherman who's out to get you. And it's presented through the perspective of a reality show about him called Maneater. The narrator, like the marine biologist narrating the show, is voiced by Chris Parnell. So he's basically doing Dr. Spuchemin from 30 Rock, but as a marine biologist, and it's amazing.
I love how he always seems in his roles to just come in into just the least likely character.
And just spin comedic gold.
And just immediately take it over and just own it. I love it.
So you start off, and basically you are this shark with all these abilities through the tutorial. That shark ends up getting captured and killed by this hunter. And when he's carving it up, he discovers that it was pregnant with a baby bull shark. And he marks this bull shark with a scar, to which he says, this way I'll recognize it when it's fully grown. And then you as the baby bull shark, bite his arm off. And he throws you into the water. And then you take control of the pup shark. And there's you start off, he throws you into a bayou, so that's the first area. And you level up. There's like an RPG leveling system, at which point you grow in size, like to a teenage shark. The final rank when you hit the max level of 30 is you're a mega, like you're literally like megalodon sized. Mm-hmm. But they just get wackier and wackier with it. Like there's these there's an infamy level, which is like a GTA alert leader where like they'll hire bounty hunters to come and kill you. And there are like named bounty hunters that you can take out for extra unlockables, because again, in the skill tree, you can unlock mutations, which, by the end, I had unlocked the full set for doing the hunters of the bioelectric mutations. So my shark had like all these bioluminescent features on it. And like, I had a passive ability where I could like discharge electricity. My teeth were coursing with electricity. Like, this game does not take itself seriously. It ends up being insanely fun for it.
I was going to say, number one, I'm wrong. You sold me on it more than what you said in the beginning. And two, I am shocked at the level of narrative that they had at the beginning of that game to give you the story that you need and just set you off on your adventure of revenge.
Yeah, it's a revenge story. Also, again, one of my favorite things being a lot of the collectibles are centered around, like, you know, launching yourself out of the water and jumping and stuff. There's a mutation you could get a few hours in called Amphibious, which literally made it so I could stay on land for so long. It was ridiculous.
That probably explains it. Like, just, I saw somebody go on a beach, and they were literally flailing and attacking people and just not needing to go onto the water. And I was thinking, what?
When you jump onto land, if you look above the shark's health bar, you have a reverse oxygen meter. But by the time I had fully upgraded the amphibious trait, I could stay on land for like 5 minutes at a time.
Jeez. The greatest fear known to man. Land sharks.
And yeah, like I said, I went with the full bioelectric. There's like basically two trees of weird mutation, like physical mutations. There's also like stone skin where you have like armor plating and stuff. But I went with all this bioelectric stuff because it's way more offensive, and that just kind of catered itself to how I was playing. My understanding is the stone skin upgrades are easier to take down boats and stuff, but I was doing a lot of leaping out of water and literally ripping people off the decks of boats.
I have to give this team a commendation, because the more you tell me about these talents and different upgrades. It sounds like a legitimate RPG if you didn't use the con.
It is.
Didn't throw in a concept of a shark. Somebody would probably think that it's some JRPG or something wacky like an MMO, and then you throw in, now I'm a shark too.
And then go each area has like a hierarchy to it. Like there's some basic side missions where, like, granted, later in the game, these ones get a little bit boring because they're kind of the same thing. It's like, okay, there's a lot of parrotfish in this particular area, so go kill 10 parrotfish. And the idea behind that is if you kill enough of the fodder enemies in an area, you draw out that area's apex predator, which then, like, the first area is simple. Like, the apex predator of the bayou is an alligator. Then when you're in open water, there's an area where the apex predator of this bay is a barracuda. Up to, like, towards the end of the game when you're in open waters and the apex predator is a sperm whale.
Damn. You
and again, the by the time whale? You're fighting, like, a... I did. That was the last apex predator. I also killed... there's one really great area where it's, like... It's basically SeaWorld, but, like, it's clearly closed, like, run down, yeah. And the tanks have all been busted open, and there's, like, sewer pipes connecting it to open water. And the apex predator of that area is an orca whale.
Wow. It's literally Free Willy.
This game's really fucking cool. Like, it is clearly a budget game, like Tripwire. They're the people that make Killing
yeah.
Floor.
Yeah, they're really good at actually not a AAA studio. The budget they have and just spinning it into great games.
So, it is rough in spots, like, visually in some areas. Like, I wish the water looked a little bit better in spots. But they work really fucking great with what they have. I played the PC version. I've heard the Xbox version is a fucking mess.
Really?
So buyer beware there.
In what ways?
Yeah, it's just not running great. I was actually talking to Shay, one of the other guys at Sword Chomp with me. He has the Xbox version. This has never happened to him before. Not even really crashing. His Xbox, while playing this game on 10 occasions so far, has literally said it's overheating and needs to shut down.
It can't handle. Yeah. It can't handle it. Nothing can handle this shark.
It cannot handle the action of this bull shark.
Jeez.
I had been sort of keeping an eye on this game. I took a look at it at PAX, but I wasn't expecting much. And I really fucking love it. It's so fun.
I was going to say, I saw this at PAX, and I literally, shame on me. I wrote it off because I was just thinking, oh, it's a shark game. You gotta play
to
shark.
Be fair, maybe we should have known, because there was always a line to play it, which is why I never played it.
It's the same reason why I didn't play other indie games, like, say, Moving Out, when I knew they were good. It just, there's just too many people. And it was just a shark game, also. I was thinking, am I going to really wait, like, say, an hour to play as a shark? And I should have.
Maybe you should have. Hindsight's 20/20. Some of the, like, random pedestrian dialogue is some of my favorites in this, too. Like, you'll jump and leap up over, like, a catamaran ship and, like, rip somebody off it. And then you'll just hear some guy like, hey, we're trying to enjoy vacation here.
That's the best. Hey, who do you think you are?
Like, it's a shark, man.
Murdering your friends and your family.
And, the combat feels really good, too, because there's a targeting system, though I wouldn't recommend using it. You kind of just want to, like, swim around, focus on one enemy at a time. The targeting is good if you're facing hunters and you kind of need to figure out where shots are coming from. But you want to be able to dodge really quickly. Apparently, the guys at Tripwire jokingly during development called the combat Shark Souls.
Shark Souls.
Yeah. Because everything is leveled, but if you're smart about combat, you could pretty much take down whatever you want if you're just diligent. Like, when I was a level 1 pup shark, I managed to take down a level 15 alligator by just, like, being quick with my dodges and stuff.
Wow. Like a true RPG? Shark Souls.
And all the leveling comes from eating. Like, you eat smaller fish to gain experience. For the bigger upgrades, you need different sorts of nutrients. So, like, you'll get basic nutrients from eating whatever. If you get, certain enemies will be labeled. It's like, oh, this is an albino barracuda. So that gives you a different type of nutrient. And then there are nutrient caches you can find on the seafloor, which just give you, like, bigger amounts of mutations and stuff like that.
It sounds like it takes the system, because immediately what came to mind when you were saying it comes from eating. I was always thinking about those old Flash games back when we were school, where you start off as the small fish, and you just eat little ones, and you progressively get larger.
Makes me think of, like, Feeding Frenzy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that was the bigger one. Yeah, Feeding Frenzy. And in this case, though, you can level up. Then you can crash parties, and then you can get electricity coursing through your fangs.
There's There's even one area that basically feels like Vegas, and there's just so many funny ideas. Like, one of the earliest areas is this sort of resort golf area, and there's literally huge water hazards that you can leap and, like, get oxygen in the middle of this golf course by just laying in the water hazard.
Just go into, like, a little continuing. Pond and then come out and have a nice recharge as a megalodon shark.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It took me by surprise in a huge way.
I mean, after from what I've seen, because this weekend I have seen this explode with so many positive reviews. Dan Reichert also, I saw, played it as well.
He did an 8-hour stream of it, which is kind of basically what happened to me, except I wasn't streaming. Like, I sat down, I'm like, let's get started on this. And then I was in the Discord with a few of our friends, and I was literally there all day, and I beat
the game. Well, that's what I was saying, like, your story, I was thinking, I was reading some other people just talking about the game in general, saying, wow, I didn't expect it to play for, you know, a couple of hours out of my day. I didn't expect my day to be this game, and it was.
And I'm still probably going to go back to finish up some of the collectible stuff. I have one more of those optional hunters to take down, and I have a bunch of collectibles, like... I got plenty of reason to keep
this
playing.
This is on Steam? Or no, the Epic Game Store, you just told me.
It's on the Epic Game Store. And just so everybody's aware, everybody has a $10 Epic coupon right now. So this game's basically $30.
I saw the Control was even $30 using one of the coupons. Not that specific coupon, but I think they had a sale or a discount literally a few days ago where Control was about $30. That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Great deals.
Also, this game's eligible for the Mega Sale, so you can use your $10 coupon, get it for $30, and then you get another $10 coupon
easy,
for buying it.
Easy. Knowing Tripwire, too, this actually... The one thing I used to love about Tripwire is that even with Killing Floor as well, because I used to play that a lot, they're definitely going to come out with DLC for this game. And that the potential for that
I
just sounds
so,
like
yeah.
it could be endless. They could probably just do so much and have so much fun.
One of my immediate thoughts was, like, what's a potential sequel or expansion for this? And my immediate thought was, well, you know, it'd be cool, in, like, a Maneater 2, if you could pick what breed of shark you were, and then your skill tree was different based off that.
Yeah, exactly. That's precisely
like,
what I was thinking
about. Like, oh, well, now you're a hammerhead, so you have these different skills. Like, instead of a tail thrash, you have, like, a head bash.
You have hammer time. It's just consistent head bashing on land. And you can just move. You can kill structures. That's what the potential for that is just so endless. I was thinking of Killing Floor 2, and they had a lot of bloat cosmetics, but they still know how to have fun in creating it, so I actually hope that they just go wild with it. I'm gonna check my Epic account, because I want to play it. I want to play as sharks. I've seen just videos.
It's really good.
People have just hopped on boats and just killed everybody. I've heard the voice actors be like,
hey,
get out of here!
And I think the smart thing they did is, you're not mega-sized, but you are a fully grown adult in the tutorial. So you kind of get an idea if you're like, oh, there's a lot of potential here, and you get like 10 minutes to play around and feel all that, and then you're the pup. So you're like, okay, now it's time to build the back up to that, and then go beyond it.
It's reasons like these as to why I love when studios do this, because you get a lot of people who are aspiring game devs to say, listen, I want to make... you know, Dark Souls, or I want to make this medieval fantasy. You got Tripwire, they're like, all right, what if you were a shark? it's feeding frenzy, but you add an RPG element on top of it, and you're just hunting. Like, that's so fun.
It's so good. It's really, it kind of came out of nowhere, for me at least. Like, I know people have been talking about it, but I didn't think much of it. And then I got very quickly sold on it talking to a few people, and I'm very happy with that purchase.
Well, to your point, though, I did see a lot of marketing for it, surprisingly enough. I saw a lot of advertisements just talking about it, and that's how
I
wasn't
from
a part
PAX.
Of it from the beginning at all.
I have a Maneater Frisbee that was handed to me at PAX.
Really? Oh, so you were really on the ground floor there. Just being broadcast in our faces. Oh, that's so funny.
Meaning I walked past a booth and some dude threw a Frisbee at me and I was like, sweet, free Frisbee.
There's so many... Well, because you know what? There's so many different communities... I'm sure there's a Discord for it, too. There's so many different communities for these games. Like, I'm still a part of the Crab Champions community on Discord.
Naturally.
Yeah, because I know for a fact that when this game's released in its full glory and splendor, it's going to take the world by storm. But yeah, there's just so many communities. I can't keep track of all of it. But I'm so glad that this one actually... of doing so well, because the premise is so dumb, but it's so funny. I love it.
again, like, talk about communities too. Like, that's another weird hope I have for this. I'm like, oh, I hope people mod just
just mod the shit out of it. Make different talent trees, make different skins. I love the modding community. That's why we got people like Blizzard also, saying, hey, you know, your mods are ours now. I'm like, dude, no. Yeah, that's nobody's gonna do that.
Also, mods are great because I hope they start really, like, somebody's like, oh, I made this whole expansive new area, new enemies, and then one guy's like, I made this mod so you could be Bruce, the shark from Finding Nemo.
Or I'm sure there'll be, like, a Jaws mod, too, and all this other garbo.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. It goes
without saying. There's going to be so much. I'm so interested to see the different types of areas that maybe you'll potentially be able to make if people could. I haven't even played it, and the potential is endless. I love it.
Game is really fucking good. That's Maneater. I also played a little bit. I played a few matches of Crucible.
Ah, yes. I read this back in school. It was a good book.
That's the... This is the new Amazon Studios MOBA.
Oh.
Yeah, has it's Amazon free to play on your MOBA Steam.
Before? I would say no.
I don't think so. I played a few matches of this during my Sword Chomp stream. Got to try out a few of the characters. Game's a little rough right now. I literally played it on launch day. Got a lot of characters and a lot of neat skins going on, so there's potential there. I did not win. It's literally a matter of learning the characters for me now. What I was most intrigued by is there's two modes right now. There's a 4-on-4 mode that's, again, very objective-based, and that's the one I think I had the best bet of winning, but still kind of learning it, learning the farming, and getting the leveling correct. And then there's a duo mode that had a really interesting premise to me. It's a multiple 2-on-2 teams with, you know, trying to make it to the final round, but there's no respawning. But one of the concept is if you're a solo player, meaning your teammate has died, and you encounter another solo player, you can agree to form an alliance with them, and then you become a team until the final round. Which I just think is an interesting concept.
I kinda like that. What is the... Is the game style similar to, say, Dota or League of Legends top-down, or is it...
It's third-person behind the back. Okay. It reminds me of, like, a Paragon.
Yeah. I was going to say, because they have other types of MOBAs like that. That's cool.
My favorite character is Earl. He is an alien big rig trucker.
People have to be stopped.
He's got a big Gatling gun, and he has the best dialogue in the game because he just goes to his other teammates, and he's like, you want to see some pictures of my kids?
What? No, he doesn't.
Yeah, no, he really does. I love Earl. His legendary skin is, he's a fry cook. It's Big Earl's Burgers, and I love it.
All right, maybe I'll check it out. Just a Google search. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Why not? But there's...
Is this out for consoles?
The weird thing, it's going to be. I don't think it is right now. The weird thing I'll note that I kind of complained about at the time was... And somebody said to me in chat, they're like, oh, if you go to their YouTube, there's these videos that break down how all the characters work. There's nothing in the game that breaks down for me how the characters work, and that's kind of my issue.
So the YouTube does, but you're saying that obviously, yeah, that's great, but outside the actual game itself, you have to go looking for it.
Ooh. Yeah, because the weird thing is, like, you go into the character descriptions, and there are character descriptions and ability descriptions, but they use a lot of verbiage that makes you like, okay, well, I don't know what that means.
Are you talking like MOBA verbiage or just in that game specific
just
verbiage?
Just in-game verbiage. Yeah. Like, one character in particular is Bug. One of the support characters, it's this little robot who has, like, this spray can. And the whole concept of, and the way it says, it goes, Bug fires off seeds and then can use its spray can to activate plants. I don't know what the fuck that means.
I mean, it's right there. He activates the plants. I don't know how much clearer they could have made it for you.
After playing a little bit, like, they just kind of don't explain how the seeds work. Like, there are seed types. So there are green plants that kind of do DPS work for you. There's blue seeds that are, like, traps. And then there's green seeds, which are AoE healing plants for your team. Like, they all work really interestingly, and it's an interestingly designed character, but there's nothing in the game... besides trial and error where I'm getting my face smashed in by people that have already figured it out.
Oh, for sure. Because they already probably have the background.
Really learn how it works.
See, I always think that games like that, and this is common opinion, because it is, they need a really good person in charge of proofreading and just general documentation. Because if you can't address even say what a plant is or what activation is or just anything that seems basic to a complete outsider, as if, for lack of a better word, you're talking to an absolute child about it, then how the hell is anybody else going to figure it out? I never have a better time trying to figure it out. It's like when you're playing a very, a game that is very abstract in its direction and gameplay, and you can only get it. And you know the types of games these are where people are saying, oh, well, if you play it for, say, a few hours, you'll get it. And I don't want that. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, like, I don't want to have to play for 4 hours before I start enjoying myself.
I don't want to have to play for 4 hours where I feel like, oh, now I get it. Activating this plant does XYZ for this amount of seconds and does this. It's like, okay, damn, man.
Mm.
Well, it sounds fun and enjoyable, though.
Totally. It's a little rough in spots, like, on launch, like I said. Like, because it is a MOBA, it's a lot about farming levels. So I was finding, like, the monsters you can kill to farm levels would, like, randomly pop in. Mm. Like, all of a sudden they'd be on top of me, and I'm like, that's kind of obnoxious.
You just get immediately decimated.
Well, it's just, like, they're in my way now, and I'm trying to find the other team. But they're really trying to, like, circumvent the way, like, heroes work like mm-hmm. that. Like, Earl, who I was telling you about, is this big lumbering character with a Gatling gun, and he's a tank, but he's a super mobile tank. Like, one of his abilities is he literally, like, the back of his Gatling gun is a rocket booster, and he can, like, fire himself off, like, long range across the map.
That's pretty cool.
So he's a super mobile tank.
But he brought his damage output's probably a little low to balance that out. Is it?
Yeah, it's a Gatling gun, so it takes a while to kind of get up to speed before he really starts laying damage in. But it's interesting. They're trying some different stuff.
I'm not too familiar with third-person MOBA space because I think the only one that I immediately think of that's stuck was Smite for me.
Yeah.
But I think the other ones, I don't think they've done too well in that space. I think Paragon stopped.
Paragon failed almost immediately.
Battleborn, that literally failed almost immediately. I've never seen such a rise and fall to grace on a MOBA before. That was bad.
It had already fallen for me when we went to that launch party.
I agree with that. I had such a weird. There's such weird interactions that I've had with games like that, just with video game parties like that, and then they don't do well. There's correlation, I'm telling you.
It's like a hilarious thing. Like, you remember Battleborn? It's like, yeah, we were at the Battleborn launch party. That was weird.
It was, because I distinctly remember they were announcing. It wasn't Bomb King, because that's Paladins, I think. But it was. Oh, it was this Lucha Libre guy. And he was
new.
Yeah,
we have the pin.
I think it was called El Rey or something. He was new. And they were advertising it on their projection screens at this party. And keep in mind, it's just at a party where, to be fair, nobody knows what's going on with Battleborn. This is what I mean. There's no way to tell. If you walked into this place, you would say, who is this luchador? And what is any of this? The entire thing
was a disarray. All I remember, and this is a testament to how jaded I get at these industry events, is we're walking in the door, and I think our friend Vinny was with me at the back, and he's looking over the thing, and he turns to me, he goes, it's not an open bar. And I go, this game's going to suck.
It's the indicator. Because, you know, I think of one of the best ones that I was, the best kind of industry party I was at like that, it was for Infinite Crisis, the DC MOBA. They paid for everything. They had stations of the game that you could play. They had a Batman logo ice sculpture. They had an open bar. And I was thinking, I'm going to play this game forever. It failed.
And you did until they shut
exactly.
it down.
Exactly. And I played it a good amount of time. But Battleborn, no open bar, big failure. You tell me. If they had a Maneater launch party, you tell me. You tell me what
there
they would have.
There would have been an open bar. Tripwire would have been paying for our booze.
Oh, yeah. They would have been paying for booze, and you would have had the Katy Perry sharks there. It would have been nice.
There would have been, isn't a blue shark a drink? Isn't that a
cocktail? Yeah, I was also thinking of, I could have swore I've seen one. It was more Hawaiian-themed. It's, like, called Blood in the Water or something. They put, like, fake red stuff in there, like the sweet red.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And it's blue.
I think what you're describing is just, I think that's a blue shark with grenadine. Like, 100%, but they call it something differently.
The drink is called a blue shark?
Yeah, like, there's a drink called the Blue Shark, I know that, and I think the one you're describing is, like, as they serve it to you, they pour grenadine in the top.
Welcome to Geckos and Cocktails. Would you like to learn how to make a video game drink to really spice up your party? Just, hit us up.
I was looking at, cocktails list, and I clicked on an onion one, which is always a good way to get a laugh, and I died at this drink that I'm like, I should actually go make this. The drink was a JonBenet Ramsey. And the recipe was just, it's a classic Shirley Temple, but with scotch.
Don't make it. It's not going to taste good. Don't do it.
It would be awful. It would be That's awful. Why.
Don't take advice from them. They're out to hurt you.
I know, but it's so hilarious.
I would just want you to do it just to confirm, like, you take one sip and you just go, yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, you shouldn't have did this.
Oh, I love it. I'm genuinely glad. I'm glad that people, despite MOBAs like this failing, I'm glad they keep it up because I like variety in the space. Because when you think MOBA, you're always going to... I'm still surprised that Heroes of the Storm ended up failing after a number of years and they couldn't keep it up. Because I thought with Blizzard's backing and frankly the menagerie of characters that you had and franchises you could pull from, I really didn't think they would ever fail. Well, quote-unquote fail. Heroes of the Storm just lost money over time. But I'm always excited to see more of those. Heroes of the Storm's
best quality to me was how short the matches were.
I want to look up to... And this is... I'm sorry, the studio... It's Amazon what, these guys?
Let me look up the actual
studio. I was going to say, I want to explore more from the... If Amazon's starting to make... If is it the Jeff Bezos Amazon?
Yeah, they've had a studio for a while. Like, they've... I'm sorry, they've had an engine
Well, no, that's what I was saying. I know that they were developing things. I just... Because this is one of the first games that I've directly heard without investigating it myself.
Yeah, it is Amazon Games. Interesting. Amazon Games. I'm sorry, that's the publisher. The developer is Relentless Studios, and the publisher is Amazon Games.
I don't hate MOBAs. I do. I like them. I always just like to look at the new ones. There were some where I would play it immediately, and I would think, this is done. But I don't know. I'll check it out. It sounds like it just needs some work. I mean, I remember when I was playing League of Legends in the beginning, it definitely needs some polish. That game was
not
perfect when it came out.
And you know what I'll give it credit for? Because this is always something I worry about with games like this, and I played it on launch day. Did not take long to get a match at all. And I'm always worried that the servers are going to be shit on launch day.
Good for them. It's a hard feat. Well, to be fair, does that mean it was popular? But if you couldn't have trouble finding a match, good for you. I'm glad. Good on these people. I'm going to be looking at Crucible. I'll be definitely looking out at Maneater.
Oh, yeah, definitely look at Maneater.
Oh, I just got your reference. This is Hall & Oates. Oh, here come. But it's... You should have said she... I thought you were just saying... Oh, here I come, just like that. And I was like, well, that's not...
Oh, no. I should have done, like, sing-songy. Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. I get it now.
She's a man-eater. I'm going to move into the drop here.
Yes, please.
Coming... This is just... I just got what's coming for the rest of May.
All right.
So, for the remainder of the month of May, here are the games hitting the physical and digital storefronts. Phantasy Star Online 2 launches on PC in the U.S. on May 27th. It's about time, you guys. We did it. Fly Punch Boom comes to PC and Switch on May 28th. Polybridge 2 comes to PC May 28th. Resolution comes to PC and Switch on May 28th. That's with two eyes. Song of Horror Episode 5, The Horror and the Song, comes to PC on May 28th.
I read this earlier. Okay, to its credit, you call it Song of Horror. The team definitely sat there and they said, guys, we're on episode 5. What do we call it? And the guy just sipping scotch in the corner was just like, I got one for you.
He was having a JonBenet Ramsey.
Exactly. He was having this weird ass drink and he's clearly off his rocks. And he just said, I got one. The Horror and the Song. And they all just.
And they were like, brilliant. Oh. You're the CEO now. Yeah. Those Who Remain comes to PC, PS4, and Xbox One May 28th. Thunder Force AC comes to Switch on May 28th. BioShock The Collection comes to Switch May 29th. As well as Borderlands Legendary Collection and XCOM 2 Collection. Switch is getting a lot of good collections on May 29th.
I've seen this too. The collection comes with 1, 2, and Infinite?
Yes.
Wow, that's a good one.
Except for Borderlands Legendary Collection, that has one good game on it.
I don't understand. They released... I'm guessing with the XCOM collection, they finished getting the DLC and everything, but they released XCOM 2, I'm pretty sure. Just base.
Yeah, this is the first one and the rest of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I don't think it's the first one, rather. I think it's the War of the Chosen and all that. Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition comes to Switch May 29th.
For that one, for sure.
That we already talked about that a little bit.
It's incredible. They got BioShock, Borderlands, and XCOM. Even if it has ports. That's incredible.
It's good stuff.
BioShock actually runs pretty well on that, too.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how that ends up running, because those are Those are some good ass games. There's a weird story I put down here that had been floating around for a while. I just thought it was super interesting in terms of, like, thinking of game development. So apparently it's come to light. The original Assassin's Creed had its side missions added to the game 5 days before launch because the CEO's son played the game and said that it, quote, had nothing to do.
Can you imagine if you have slaved and toiled at this game and the CEO's son just goes, it's boring. I would die.
Yeah, that's, like, you little shit. This story...
He goes, this game's boring, there's nothing to do. You're literally being held back, you little son of a bitch.
You're literally a week away from your big launch. That story was shared in a Twitter thread from Charles Randall, a former Ubisoft employee who was just talking about, like, crazy game development stories. And he's like, oh yeah, the reason those side missions feel sort of bare bones is because they were literally added, like, days before we shipped.
I love stories like those because, number one, people over the years, they'll come out and say, oh, I'm sure there have been people with the original Assassin's Creed, they'll say they love the side missions. I bet you. There's always some. And it's always interesting to watch those little anecdotes or hear them from people who are like, oh, yeah, that shit never almost made it. Like, I was on the chopping block. Like, with Banjo-Kazooie, I remember with, I don't think it was Grant Kirkhope, I forgot, it was one of the devs from the game. There's this weird ice key that's just in the game, and you can't get it. And a lot of people tried to get it, but it's impossible. And people thought, oh, it's a secret, like, well, and the devs are just like, no, it's just, like, an unused asset. Don't worry about it.
We just had nowhere to put it, yeah.
I love that.
See, the crazy thing is, I read through his Twitter story, and, like, he's just telling you how it came to light, and then my favorite caveat from it, he goes, oh yeah, I forgot the key part. He says, we have to put all these side missions into the game in 5 days, and then they have to be bug-free because the build is going to be burned directly to disk and released to retail.
My heart bleeds because I got anxiety just from thinking about that. It's like you get a call. It's a nice, well-earned day. It's on a Saturday. The game's about to ship. You guys marked it gold. Called it a day. You get a call from the CEO right when you're about to have dinner with the wife and kids. And he just says, drop everything you're doing. We're going to go make some side quests. You're just like, what?
And the caveat to that story is they discovered later one of them did have a bug. One of those last optional assassination targets has a glitch, and this is, I believe, still in the original Assassin's Creed, where he could fall through the world and you'd be unable to reach him if you come at him from a certain angle when going for the assassination.
Bug-free? Man, that's wild.
Bug-free.
That's a wild one. I kind of like that story, too, because we're talking Assassin's Creed 1, right?
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, that's one of the only ones that I'd played, and I really like that game, so I'm sure I actually like the side quest, too. I'm sure that was in there.
Yeah.
I actually can't imagine if it didn't have side quests. It really would have nothing to do. I would agree with that. You'd probably blaze through the game. The
world would definitely feel empty.
Yeah, you'd probably blaze through it. Damn, and now look how far it's come. Now you have Odyssey, and everyone's saying, this game is too big. That's funny.
And then they said, Valhalla will be smaller. Just kidding, it's bigger.
It's like a tug of war. Nobody knows what they want the games to be for the PR space. They're saying, no, it's going to be small. Everyone just goes, oh. He goes, I mean small in a big way. We just go, oh.
They just released the map, and it's larger.
It's so funny. Oh, you got to love it. I'm still excited. I almost wish that you just go back to the days where you didn't know much about it. They just released something. So here you go. Check it out.
Here you go. Enjoy it, man. Check it out. Hope your kids like it.
Yeah, hope your kids find it
cool.
And then we
didn't.
Yeah, hope your kids find it rad. Yo, it's a 5 out of 10 right there.
Here's a story I was talking about weirdly in the week. I don't know if I feel like a lot of people weirdly don't know this. Maybe you do. Did you know the original Assassin's Creed started development as a Prince of Persia game?
I did know that.
Yeah. Yep. I believe the working title was Prince of Persia, Assassin's Creed.
Prince of Persia is one of the IPs that I know it did get love. I was going to say, it gets no love. Meanwhile, it did have a very... I thought it had a pretty successful Xbox shelf life with the Sands of Time.
It did. Sands of Time, I love. I think Warrior Within, looking back at it, it kind of makes me cringe.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Two Thrones is bad. nobody played that 360 remake. But
I really thought you were about to give me a butt. You never got there. It's like, it's bad.
Yeah, Two Thrones is bad.
The remake that they had was weird. That... or rather, the reimagining of it that they came out with on...
It's 360. It's a PS3. Really good game. Nobody played it, but it's a really good game.
I love the art style for it. It was cel-shaded. It was very good. I actually liked it a lot.
Actually, it was on sale recently. I bought the PC version of that.
I always used to tell people, if you want to know the differences between Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, and Warrior Within, all you have to do is look at the box art. They are completely contrasted to one another. One of them just looks like more akin to the older Prince of Persia games, where you're on a wall and you have a scimitar, and it looks very... It just looks very, at least, adventurous to a degree. You look at Warrior Within, it throws all that out the window. The guy's got blood on the blades, and he's like, I am not fucking around anymore. And you're just like, well, I didn't...
Also, I mean, the part that's, like, cringy to it, looking back at it now, is, like, they use, like, all these heavy metal tracks that just, like, at the time must have been like, fuck yeah! But, like, now you're like, this doesn't fit with the setting and tone of the game. Like, it feels wrong.
Not at all. Go back to...
It has not aged well.
There's a, It just released recently, too. It was a... It's kind of a... It's a written history, or it's, like, also an artist animation history of the Prince of Persia game, the original for the Super Nintendo. If you just listen to the developer's vision for the game back then, in terms of the musical inspiration and every... It is completely 180 opposite for what they started with in The Warrior Within. They threw it all out the fucking window, and to your point, they were probably just like, yo, you want to be really rad in this game? Heavy metal. And they would just go, oh, yeah, like, let's get... It completely ruins the whole cultural tone of everything. I like how the Prince of Persia games are very... They're very mystical, and it was a little bit of mystique to it, and you had this kind of Arabian Nights kind of feel to it, and... You were transported to those areas that they were, that they were hosted in. And in these new ones, it almost reminded me of the Doom soundtrack, where it's literally like, called The Warrior Within. Well, they just start slashing wildly, and you're just thinking, where am I, right?
Well, if you look at that, like, you could see how the period piece stuff and all that, you could see how Assassin's Creed comes out of that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially the first one. Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, you know what's funny enough is in Odyssey, there's a series of quests that were released later that like sort of pay homage to its roots. You know, what being set in Greece after the war with Persia. There's a quest line called The Prince of Persia,
cool,
in which you meet a blind Persian man who survived the war, and like you have to kind of go through a quest line for him.
That's cool. I like that little homage right there. I just had a memory triggered in Assassin's Creed 1, which is why it's so good. That one NPC who literally just goes, you must be busy, I understand. And you would literally, there were ways that you could kill people in public, and you could time it just right where he goes, you must be busy, I understand. And you're just murdering somebody in public, and you just walk away. I love that game.
You know what I'll never forget in the original Assassin's Creed? Blending in by pretending to be a monk. Yep. And they're like, hey, that one monk's got a lot of knives.
I specifically remember the E3 demo that they had shown, where you blended in originally, and I thought that was so cool. I used to think that was the coolest thing. Just because they blended in the period piece monk outfits with the assassins. But then,
yeah,
in, I think, 2 and every other iteration, there was always a group that you can blend in with. I love what they that did with Ezio, like you, though, where you can throw money on the ground and have people flock to you. That was a cool way to adjust for it. I love the creativity that they used to have in those games for that.
Another great move with 2 was like some of the distraction things. Like, you could hire a group of courtesans to like distract the guards.
Yep. So cool. I used to, and it was Ezio too. So I was like, Ezio, you're so fly, man. I was like, man, that's a great move.
If you remember, then I think it was in the fourth Ezio game, which I'm having a hard time remembering the name of.
Revelations.
It was the one that, In Revelations, they introduced a bomb crafting system.
Yes, with from
and
Da Vinci.
One of the bombs, and one of the bombs you could make was a money bomb, where you would just put a bunch of money in it, and you would like strap it down, and it would just explode money into the street and draw those crowds that you were talking about.
Revelations. That Revelations had one of the coolest trailers. They had a reveal trailer for it where Ezio was just getting the Assassin army to fight the Templar army. It was a cool trailer. They always had cool trailers for those.
Oh, yeah, that ended up being the opener. Yeah. And then that game also had a really cool segment where you played as Altair.
Yep.
Like days before he died.
Literally, yep. And he's on the box art. It was crazy cool.
Yeah.
Loved it.
That was really, like, it was like the Animus within an Animus thing. Yeah. Like, you were Ezio, and Ezio would find these ancient, like, tomes, and he would relive Altair's memories. Yep.
And I thought that was a nice way to just cap it all, because after watching Valhalla's trailer, I was like, man, that trailer was so good. And then I went back through the others, and I said, oh, never mind. They always just had really good trailers for this game. Like, it never...
They're good. They're never good at cutting trailers. Yeah.
Three had a really good trailer at the time when they announced it, too. It just ended up being mediocre, but it was cool. Yeah. Reminds me of the Halo trailers, too. Video games have always had some pretty awesome trailers for them.
Tell that to the Covenant.
Always, yeah. It's like, come on.
I don't know why I think there was like a meme that always made me laugh with that like Halo 2 line where like, that stuff's expensive, boy. And he's like, tell that to the Covenant. And then it's like a shot of that same like gunnery sergeant just talking to like one of the elders. And he's like, that equipment's expensive, boy.
Halo had such great dialogue, which is why when I used to watch Red vs. Blue back in the day, I used to think it was just so funny because it was, yeah, it was a comedy, but it also just, some of the lines were so ridiculous that it matched what you probably could have found in Halo of just being
the insane. Tone of Halo, yeah.
It
just had
the tone of it. It was ridiculous, and that's what made it. I'm definitely going to play the Assassin's Creed games over time. I want to play through 2 again, because I completely forgot it. But Ezio had a good track record of games.
You gonna swing up that that Ezio collection? Yeah,
I forgot they made that too at the time. I was looking it up, and I was like, oh, the Ezio collection. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure somebody just made a definitive list, because that's why I love the community. Somebody somewhere is like, the definitive Assassin's Creed list. Like, don't worry about all this stuff, but...
There's also a pretty good DS game where you play as Ezio in Spain.
Very true. But we'll see. But I like that. The only news I really had for this, I know there was other stuff that happened, but one that really kind of raised my eyebrows, because I did think it was dead, Tencent came out of the woodwork. And they put a...
With System Shock,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. They put a big cash injection into the game's development, and I was reading initially that some people in the community of the space were kind of freaking out because, you know, Tencent doesn't have the best track record for a lot of games, mainly because they focus on mobile monetization with their apps. Or they're just not very... They're not very good with their ventures when they take ownership. But this one... In this budgeting increase that they gave it, they basically just invested money. And they're not taking the IP. Night Dive still has it. But Other Side Entertainment went to like an interview and they're like, yeah, honestly, their sole intention was just to continue the development to completion.
Which is awesome.
Which I am a big fan of, because I did think that the development of System Shock 3 was dead. Because I've heard about it.
I mean, I'll bet you they get
easily a long time, and never happened.
It feels like forever. At least 10 years we've been talking about this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like at the very least they're gonna get like a publishing credit or something
for sure, which is fine. Let it happen.
Yeah, which totally.
I think they're making
it's almost
Shock
like
2 remastered soon. Somebody's helming that. I forget who.
Yeah,
a fever dream.
I know that was happening. No, that's real. It's kind of like almost the same situation as like this is a little bit more deals were made because there were exclusivity deals, like in the sense of like Street Fighter V wouldn't have happened without Sony.
Yep.
But they didn't take ownership of the IP.
Nope.
They did take console exclusivity for that game.
Frankly,
but they didn't take ownership of the IP.
For me, with 5, maybe they should have, because that game ended up being handled terribly. Maybe they should have taken ownership.
It's,
it was terrible, the way that they launched that game.
Capcom, wouldn't it be great, actually, if Sony is able to sort of salvage what Street Fighter is going... Like, they take ownership of it for a Street Fighter 6?
Yeah, I'd be okay. 5 killed my initial taste for the game, because I loved 4. 4 was handled pretty damn well. And then 5, I remember, it was released without even an arcade mode. And I said, okay, you know, because I was an idiot, and I bought it. Full price, and I was like, well, it's going to come out. And then when it did, it was just garbage. It was just garbage. And then by the time that it was even going to be a definitive edition, they re-released it as they did. And then they had an arcade edition, and then they had 5 more, and it was just terrible. And the DLC that they had was bad. Everything was just bad.
I can't even look at that statue of Ryu, I am.
Yeah, well, you can still look at him. Ryu's a cool guy.
Actually, you know what's annoying about that statue I got in the collector's edition? Mm-hmm. That thing falls down all the time.
Just like the game itself. It's supposed to be representative of the entire status of the fucking game.
Just saying, Capcom, I shouldn't have to lean it against the wall.
Just saying, Ryu should be able to stand on his own 2 feet, just a guess. But yeah, I'm actually pretty excited, though. Let him finish it. Just get the game out. I'm so excited for it. I'm not too overtly optimistic for it, because 2 was just really good, and it was really influential when I played it back in the day. So I'm going to have nostalgia glasses going in, I'll admit it. But as with anything, it's not going to take real graphics to wow me. So long as the story is just equally good, okay, I'd be cool with it.
I hope it scratches that itch for me that hasn't really been satisfied since the original BioShock.
Yeah, give me a nice space sci-fi horror. Just give me it. It'll be so good. My favorite games ended up just being sci-fi horrors in that way, and we've had a good slew of them recently. We had Alien Isolation, you had the Dead Spaces. You know, we're not deprived of them, but definitely one that's just current gen that could be released. I would love it. Eat it up.
Yeah, no. That would be fan-fucking-tastic.
Well, that's just fantastic. Other than that...
Well, though, that's just great.
That's really it. Yeah. I haven't really been playing anything else.
I think we covered some ground today, but I don't think there's anything else big going on in the world.
You want to stream Dino Crisis?
I do really want to... we should set up some time to actually do that. Do you have a feasible way to play Dino Crisis?
Does anybody?
I do.
Well, tell me this. What's the feasible way?
I have the PS3 version of Dino Crisis.
Is it only on the PS3? Is it not on the PS4 by a classic or anything? Probably not.
It's not on the Jesus PS4, Christ. No. It's digitally
it's
on
over.
The PS3.
It's over. Forget it. Forget I even said anything.
It's not over. We'll talk about it off air. Right. Until then, I'm going to move us into housekeeping. Please. All right. Eric, thanks for hanging out today. Let's start by giving a big thanks to Heather Ramos for our logo and Ed Biquette for our wonderful intro. Ask us questions, geckogamespodcast@gmail.com. If you want to support us, follow us, give us the 5 stars on the iTunes, on the Spotify's, on all of those fun podcast services you use. You could use Anchor to send us money, which we desperately need because we're horrible, horrible people. Find us on Twitter @beautiful_Eric to find Eric over here and @TheRichMeister0 to find myself. Until then, it's been our pleasure to hang out.
I was ready to jump on you. I was going to say, if this guy tells me that we're bad with finances, I'm going to jump down his throat. Who's bad?
I spent all the money on aviary attorney.
I'm sitting on my throne of George Washington's. Thank you, everybody. Have a good one.